And then where do you suppose your money will be coming in from?
One of the things, that, Madam Chairman, that we're going to try and do is to make the December 1 grant deadline for Community Mental Health Center staffing grant application. Jack, the Region 10 mental health consultant was up here about 7 months ago, right after the funds had been impounded. And he told us that if we'd have had a grant application in before the funds were impounded, we'd have probably got it funded. Even though there's 30-some others that have been approved and haven't been funded in the nation, that our need, our priority in Anchorage is so great that it probably would have been funded. So we're going to go ahead, and even though the funds are impounded and litigation and everything else, we're going to get an application in. At the same time, we've developed a very close working relationship with the Mental Health Division. We're working jointly, and we've worked with you jointly on getting House Bill 358 going, and we'll continue to push that. If that goes through, then we'll start on a similar ordinance with the borough, so that we have an interlocking system of funding sources. So much from the state, so much from the borough. So that's not left up to chance. That's what we're doing besides funding. Now, each year as we plan, hopefully we'll pick a priority area. As everybody knows, one of our highest priorities in this state, because of the age of our population, is children and adolescent services. So that we're trying to get basic, comprehensive mental health services, minimum but wide-ranging, inpatient, outpatient, partial, 24-hour-a-day emergency, consultation, and education. Then we want to use that base to build more specialized, specific-type programs to meet specific target areas. So it won't be just planning. That's why I said it'll be planning, development, and seeking the resources, and then going ahead and trying to implement it.
Sounds great. Any questions of Mr. Eccles or Joyce Munson?
Another good thing, too, is that in developing our plans, we're working very closely with the regional mental health clinic here, because even if we didn't have to do it for a community mental health center catchment area concept, we would still want to do it. It's only logical that if we have services, people from all over the region, and our region goes from Tok clear up almost to the Canadian border too, are going to be coming to Anchorage seeking these services. Another thing is we've got a very good relationship now with API. And one of the things we were able to implement, and one of our priorities always because of our lack of manpower pool, is to, as much as possible, utilize existing resources, even if they're not mental health resources. How can we train them? How can we orient them so that they can become a mental health resource? So now there's a public health nurse from the Borough Health Department attend staff meetings, patient staff meetings at API. Once a patient gets ready to leave API, then she coordinates it with the public health nurse in whose region that patient is going to return from API. So that is a contact person now. That lends some continuity and some aftercare service. And one of the things that we found in these types of approaches is that you can keep about 75% of your patients from returning to the state hospital if, when they need it, they can just call somebody and talk. You know, you don't always need to bring them in. But if there's someone they can talk to when their anxiety levels go up, this is going to keep a lot of them out. So that's an area where state, borough, are sort of coordinating their effort. And that's just one of several and one of many more that we're anticipating.
Thank you. I want to make one other comment here. I want to thank the mental health group for helping make it possible for this committee to exist. We're well aware of the input you had at the time when these committees were being chosen. And there is a very good possibility that this particular committee would not have been in existence without the much input that came from all of the people involved in your program. Okay. So we recognize that. We will attempt to meet the responsibilities. Dr. Schrader.
Are you on the verge of
adjournment? We want to see the Salmonberry story.
Okay,
otherwise, we're on the verge of adjournment.
All right. I just had a feeling we were on the verge of adjournment.
Okay.
I wanted to remind you of a little bit. I was going to make some remarks about mental retardation, but let's see the movie.
All right. We might mention that because the people from the Alaska Retarded Children's Association are very anxious to know what the state plan is according to the new Federal Register guidelines and this type of thing. So would you like to comment on that briefly before we see it, in case we lose some people, or afterwards? After?
I prefer to comment on it afterwards.
All right. Then I suggest that we do adjourn at least one.
How do we pay for patient travel to get the medical care to which I'm entitled? Patients pretty much made their own way down the passenger and then the PHS took over. In the more recent past, the PHS had taken over that, so that the patient's travel money, except in some circumstances, was paid for, and also any travel on the history was also paid for by the PHS. The amount of money spent on that last year in Kotzebue and Nome was $66,000, which is a tremendous amount of money. We didn't get any increase in travel money at all in our budget this year, and yet plane fares have increased at a rate of about 5%. Besides that, we're increasing the amount of services we give. We increase the number of special clinics. I'm sure you kind of all realize that. So that the amount of services and people traveling have increased. This obviously is putting a strain on that stable amount of money, the static amount of money that we had to spend to get patients in here and down to Anchorage for the treatment that they need. Up here, I have sort of, every time I authorize somebody in over the radio, I ask the health aide if they think the patient or the patient's relatives can pay their fare in, or if not, at least contribute to the fare or pay a round trip fare. That is to say, contribute every possible amount of money that they possibly can. And we've gotten really good response, and it's helped. We've gotten a breakdown of monies from Margaret to Russell, our travel clerk, and the amount of money spent for travel from the villages to Kotzebue has shrunk somewhat, and I think it's because of that. And I just want to thank all of you up here for doing that. But in the same breath of thanking you for doing that, I'm just going to have to say that we're going to have to keep doing it at the same level that we have been, trying to get people to pay their fares at Kotzebue, and even more so, to really stress the importance of that. The more people that will pay their fares to Kotzebue, the more money there is left for other people that can't pay their fares to come to Kotzebue. And what's probably even more important, since about two-thirds of the money that was spent for travel is spent between Kotzebue or Nome, it lets us get more people in the country, the treatment that they need. The treatment that we can give in Nome and the treatment we can give in Kotzebue is limited, and much of the treatment is needed in Anchorage. That's the government. That's $77 a show to get somebody in Anchorage, because Anchorage is able to pay their back. We could possibly get people to contribute parts of their fares to Anchorage, or their people who live in Kotzebue, their fares to Anchorage, people who live in villages, if they can continue to contribute to their fares to Kotzebue and even on to Anchorage. I think you can understand how important that is for us. It's voluntary, of course. We try to thank everybody that does it. I try to make it a point of everyone that I know paid their way down. I try to thank them very much for doing that, because it is important. And I just want to stress in front of all of you, from both halves of the service unit, that all the money prepared from Nome, Uniclete, or Kotzebue to Anchorage comes out of that static PHS budget that is not increased. And therefore, it's a limiting factor. I don't think any of us agree with it, and we're all fighting to try to increase it. Mr. Brock back in the back of the room was, really very disappointed when we didn't get any more money than we asked for. And obviously the rest of us are disappointed, but that's what's happened, and we have to work with it. And if we all contribute and help, I think we'll do all right. But it's going to take everybody's cooperation, even more than we've gotten in the past, which has been wonderful. I know that some villages have sort of contingency funds, emergency funds, for patients that can't pay. This was done in the past and lapsed, I think, a bit. That's something you could start up again. Bingo monies, raffles, whatever you do to raise money, that sort of thing can be used to contribute to some fares. And it all helps, believe me, it really does. this ties in with this radio call that I think by having one doctor on the radio, it cuts down on the travel, and everyone in this half knows that I'm going to, as soon as we authorize somebody in, the very next question is, can they pay their way? And it's sort of a standard question, and I try to ask it in a non-standard way so people realize they mean it. That, I think, summarizes what I've got to say about travel money. It's not a pretty picture, but it's a real problem, and it's a problem we're going to have to work with and keep getting your support on. And I just want you all to understand why we're bugging you about it. It's not because we don't want to pay it, because we'd like to get more people into the care that they need to get. And the more other people help, the more other people help pay, the more total patients we can get in. Are there any comments about that? The grumbling, even better.
Dr. Hoffman, do you have anything to add?
I wonder if I had a bunch of people come in, and I wonder if they wouldn't mind if we took that topic up later on this afternoon. Are you free to come back?
Mm-hmm. And I finished that topic.
Yeah, all right.
Now, I can retire from here and let these other people talk about things. Let me just eliminate a couple of things here that I don't really want to talk about. One is prenatal forms. Now, Margaret Crawford is here and is going to talk with us this afternoon for some time, in which she's going to be setting up, or helping to set up, a program to standardize prenatal forms and prenatal care in the northern half of the service unit. She'll be working primarily and most directly with Dr. Christensen. I don't know what's happening down in Nome. That's a different system. So that she'll talk to us about that. And Dr. Christensen will be the primary doctor involved in this. And so I'm not going to even mention prenatal forms anymore, because I think we're going to get some real concrete things out of that discussion. And the last thing, just to finish off, is the problem-oriented medical record, something that Dr. Huffman is very interested in, I know, what we've been working on. And I think that I don't want to talk right now, but when I have another chance to address all of you, I'll get into that a little bit further.
Another thing we heard that you're meeting from 26 villages, and that we would have the opportunity to share with you some of your problems, or that you could share them with us, in other words. So, would you like me to do anything else now, or do you want us to just be here so you can tell us your problems, and then we can in turn ask questions back?
Are you dealing with problems that, I don't know, as far as I know, in the Northern Town area, we have at least one mental patient per village.
I wonder if we could ask any of you who are from the villages, if you could tell us what some of the problems are in the villages, how you see possibly emotional problems, if there are any health problems in general. We're interested in all of the health problems. We would like to know how you operate. We'd like to know the hierarchy from how the physicians work with you and the radio community. And there's just a number of things that we don't know because we're not really in the rural area. A number of
is this for daily health care? Is this for daily health care?
It might not be appropriate for me to volunteer some information here, since there's so many mental health professionals represented. Joe Ryan, our social worker, is out of town. I'm sure he'd like very much to see his mother passed away recently. Please be interviewed. At least the meeting of the Health Board, they created out the number one problem, the most serious. They didn't say alcoholism in the report, but that was what most of the discussion was about. The need to deal with this serious problem is becoming more and worse here.
We're just sort of moving.
I'm sure this is what Joe Ryan was doing here. Very new to whatever.
suggestion. Could we ask the question, would you? When you're speaking about alcoholism, this is one of the problems that is coming up time and time again. How do we deal with it now? How do we deal with it now on a village level?
On the village level?
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm sure there's a variety of answers to that. I'm not personally familiar with how any particular village deals with it. I'd be more appropriate to have some of the health agents from the larger villages address this question.
Could we have some input from village agents in different villages? How severe the problem is and how it's dealt with at the present time.
The only village I think of now that has any capacity to deal with it in any way is Shungnak. They built a very nice, quite large community house, a portion of which has been kind of set aside as a cell, I hate to say. I think that's a fair statement, though. Some place to put a person while he's drying out, for a couple of days. But I'm not familiar with any other specific situation.
Is there any treatment at all in the other villages around the world? Or is there a center here in Kotzebue that people are brought to?
Maybe I can help a little bit. I think as the health personnel deal with the problem, it's really divided into two. The problem in the villages, the drinking problem in the villages, have historically been handled by the peoples of the village with pretty good success. The same would be the case for mental health problems. The villages, being a fairly tight and unified group, are able to tolerate and handle within their structure many of these mental, social, and alcohol problems. Occasionally things do erupt in which people are injured, families break down, and there are other disturbances that have outrun the abilities of the villages to cope, at which point then the medical the physicians here or unknown become involved. Generally, the villages do a fine toleration, I guess, the key as to how alcohol problems are handled in the village. And it's been very successful. I mean, speaking with the health aides and the physicians here before, that to a greater or lesser degree is fairly successful. The problems in Kotzebue, on the other hand, are totally different and have to be separated. Kotzebue does not have the closeness and the unification that each village does. Kotzebue does not have that sort of group feeling that the villages do. And so the problems with alcohol are not really handled by the village per se, by the people in the village. And other personnel become involved. The other personnel that get involved are the health personnel, the police, and interested townspeople. In Kotzebue, presently, there's an organization called the Hope Center, which was recently reorganized with the help of one of our physicians and several townspeople. Dr. Knowles is a physician that's sort of working at the Hope Center, with the Hope Center. They have a new director after some rocky directorships in the past. And hopefully, with people's assistance, that the Hope Center program, which is sort of a social awareness program, is going to develop. The health problems that develop from alcohol are handled by the hospital. Anybody that's hurt either seriously in the village or in Kotzebue are known to the hospital and get whatever appropriate treatment is needed. And then, to whatever ability we can do it with our limited social resources, Mr. Joe Ryan, who's our social worker here, Nome does not have a PHS social worker. But here in Kotzebue, our social worker attempts to formulate some sort of a follow-up plan, which may involve continued physician contact or Hope Center contact. the third resource, the third problem is sleeping people off who are drunk beyond the bounds of reasonability. It's been the hospital policy in the past not to accept the patients that do not have medical problems associated with their alcohol. Sleeping off has been done in two places. It's been done at home, which was quite successful, and it was done in the city jail, which has been relatively successful. For a while, the people in Hopewell were sleeping, a few people, but their direction is not headed towards the quote sleep-off center like there is in Bethlehem. I don't know if that sort of helps. If you've got to separate the, how things are handled in the village from how things are handled in Kotzebue, simply because the villages are so very different and so much better able to cope with problems than we are, simply because things like this do break down in big cities.
I'd like to give the, I think I'm real familiar with the background of Wales, the history of the drinking pattern. When the early days in the first contact with Wales people had the drinking and liquor with the Irish. Well, before they didn't have any practice of alcoholic beverage in the villages of Wales, the village of Wales. And then, Wales came in 1870, first contact. They part of their trade was alcohol beverage. They would get the natives drinking. It'd be easier to trade with them. And this is what happened one time. They were trading again, and one of the captains accused one of the natives that was spyglass, what they call spyglass, stolen and the pipe developed. Quite a few of the natives were killed, and so were the captain of the whaling crew. And when the pipe was over from the three skin boatloads, there was only one skin boatload of native crew left, and half of the whaling crew was killed off. And from that bad experience, the natives in the village said this alcohol is not bring anything good to it, and we will not allow any drinking. So the village became dry from then on. It was a total dry village, controlled by the council, and it was dry all the way as far as I can remember back in 1935 when I moved away. And it was dry until they built this base. 6 miles from the village, they built this radar site, and they start bringing this liquid. And so, with the servicemen going overseas and back and being served, until they acquired this drinking habit, they brought this habit back to them to the village before they didn't have. And there was a breakdown in the whole system, began to break down. And where before they didn't need any police force to enforce the law, they had this old tradition that was sufficient enough to keep law and order in the village. It was the old folks who had the say, and they had, whatever the say goes among the old folks. I want to point out this real good example. I was in Kharki in 1935, and in Kharki, there were a lot of old folks in this gathering place for men. My grandfather sent me on an errand. My grandfather sent me on an errand, and I walked up, and my uncle followed me right behind. And I started walking. When I started walking, my uncle stopped me. He said, anytime these old folks sent you on an errand, you don't walk, you run. So that's the system that we live under. You run every time the old folks tell you. You do something, you run. And that was the discipline part of the, you know, that they reinforced the old folks' law. And their word was the law. See, this was the old, good old system, but that old system broke down. And now the thing that begins to develop is now the teachers say you must get educated, you must go to recruitment. And there was a battle that took place between my aunt and that teacher. My aunt says, no, we must keep you in the village. We must keep you, you've got enough education. 8th grade is enough education for you. We must teach you hunting and fishing, too. We must impart that part of our culture, too. And 8th grade, as long as you can read the Bible and have after 8th grade, you can't be cheated now, and that's sufficient. Now it's like to teach you, but now the education is a must. We must educate you too, and that's a battle. Of course, my aunt went out that time, and I didn't get to go to school until 2 years later after she passed away, and I went to school. I was pretty old when I finally went back to school, about 20 years old. And so the old tradition was very strong until it began to break down. Now that we're in a period in some of the villages where they don't know how to cope with this drinking problem. And I think it's a wonder if they've done a real good, admirable job of patting down this situation. They handle themselves on the village level where they don't allow any liquor to get into the village. They send the package back, and this is the village level effort of stopping alcoholism. And where in the villages, they have this opportunity to get $5,000 to $10,000 as an alternative to drinking. The response is not too good because we were just getting cranked up to give this to the villages, and the nation cut off the funds, and we stopped. Well, there's no more funds. Okay, then we're getting cranked up again. Now they set up a deadline. We get till October 15th, which of course is it's pretty hard to crank up this program again after it's been cut off. And what if they cut us off again? This type of attitude. When you don't have a stable long-range program, it's hard to set up a program on this level from, say, corporate level. As a deputy director, before I became a deputy director of Northern Sun Health Corporation, I was out in the villages. Just starting out introducing NIAAA $5,000 to $10,000 of the alternative to drinking. And the fellow came up with the we'd like to set up a coffee shop workshop combination in town. And they voted for this $5,000 to $10,000, which in fact was a 2 year program they thought would be up to $30,000, 2 years, $10,000 a year. Which would be sufficient for town people. They say that the town is not the native village. In the first place, it was founded on a mining town. And the town, you have your some King Islanders, you have your Asian people, and some Dining people, and there's kind of a faction in that village. And you don't have that unity like you would have, say, if it was all King Island and it was all Dining. And you don't have that unity. But then, because of that, they said we should set up a coffee shop where we can work together to work out our differences and help each other repair, or help each other repair the tools, snow machines and things like that. And coffee shop would be the profit-making part of it to sustain this workshop for the village. And this type of program they propose to do. And they have to change this. They set up another rule. You cannot put the 3 year program, so you have to change the whole thing. Now we have to go back and change the whole thing. And this kind of situation developed. Now this paperwork, you can't do that now. I come in right back and says, you got to change your paperwork here. It's not very easy to try to set up a program when you get different directors. This is a new director. And so we don't have any alcoholism program in North Sound. We're not funded. Consequently, we don't have a travel fund for that type of program. We have to catch them whenever we go into the village. And trying to, most of my effort was mailing the package sent by Black Unlock. And it's a grant fund. And I hope that the villages can somehow develop recreation room, a workshop, because in most of the villages, for in color, for example, the job rate there is about 70%, and they don't know what to do with the job. You've got to keep them doing something besides being bored. You do have a workshop, and it's a place to get together. That's an alternative to drinking. So you must set up some place where they can expend energy, pool table for young people, and if you can set up this type of program in a place where they have recreation room, you have something for them to do besides just sitting in where they have jobless rate is so high. In this kind of situation, you take them in the village.
Could I ask a question? This
state has a grant and aid program for the treatment of alcoholism, and Senator Hensley and I were involved in setting that up some years ago in the legislature. Do any of the villages have any kind of a program that's going whereby they're getting some state funds for setting up some kind of a little rehabilitation center, workshop, sleep-off place, whatever you might want to call it? Don't any of the villages come in under that?
Do any of the villages have any place where you could sleep off? Or you have sleep off center or anything with your council? How long is it programming?
Well, it's been in for about 4 years, I guess. And the village would have to make a certain local effort for some of that to just be in working to, you know, working on a building or whatever that is. And I'm just wondering how come none of the villages are getting in on that.
Were the village councils aware of it? Has there not state funds?
Well, I'm not sure whether we've been funding that program.
I know that there would have to be a proposal written up before anything like that could be received, too, I'm quite sure.
Ms. Byrne, one thing this committee might be aware of, they are meeting with a relatively new concept in health care. You are meeting with the primary health care providers for Northwest Alaska. And what we need, I think, in the legislature is an awareness that we're trying to build a system, starting with the people who have needs, going that way, rather than what has been, with all due respect in the past, and this is not only through Alaska, but all across the country, little separate programs, everybody coming in doing their own thing. I think what we're dealing with, maybe the key word is system. And I think that sort of your committees are aware that these are the folks that are hopefully dealing with all of the problems of health care and mental health in the village.
Madam Chair,
yeah.
Are you
discussing? No, I'm Huffman.
Are you Huffman?
Okay.
Yesterday, we had a meeting with some people from the AFA, and they gave us a brief rundown on the systems that are starting to work under corporations. Now, we understood that the North Sound Corporation is more active, but there are two of you. Would you mind giving us a brief rundown about just the North Sound? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, I guess I'm talking a bit more generally than that, just to try to key you in. I was feeling that you were fumbling a bit with some way to interface with the group,
right.
And I was trying to give your committee a little bit of an introduction as to who we are, and this is a context of health aid meeting. To try to work out the problems that they face. I guess I'm struggling to say, how do we relate to you? And I don't know what the techniques are. I think this is a little cumbersome with all of us here. You know, we're going to get a very spasmodic reaction from each of us that has
a... Maybe I could help a little bit, Dr. Hoffman. But our committee, as we look at ourselves, we feel that our responsibility, since it allowed us to have this interview, is to talk about the delivery system.
Good.
And the way I see a delivery system is how your expertise gets to the consumer. Not much different than if you were selling meat and somebody needed that meat, and how do you get it to the person who needs it the most? See, this is what we're talking about. Pure and simple, what's a delivery system of the people who can deliver a service to those who need the service? And we know that there's been a lack of delivery system in the rural areas. We know there are things being done to develop that delivery system. And I think this is what you were just talking about as a system. But we don't know how well developed it is. We don't know how much you're offering the people that need it. For instance, I know a little bit about hearing problems as does Dr. Chris, because we work with them. We know the delivery system is very faulty at one time. We know it improved. We know now there aren't quite as many problems in the hearing field. Now we're hearing that there are problems in the villages, mental health problems, such as maybe young people attempting to commit suicide. Now we're hearing this all the time, but we don't know if this is true. If they are, if there's a high incidence of this because something's happening. Culturally, they aren't able to adjust to something that's being forced on them. How is this being taken care of? How are we getting expertise from people who might be able to deal with it to them? Maybe those people are just the ones you're developing right here. See, maybe this is your delivery system. You're training people to deal with that. So if you could tell us your delivery system, it would help us.
Maybe just quickly to back up and say the delivery system, the beauty of it is it's a
evolving from the people themselves rather than coming. I think the concept you mentioned, what I was reading you was saying, is you develop a delivery system and then be sure it delivers. What we're saying here as health aides is, here's the problems we face, how do we handle those? And it starts from the consumer, if you will. And I think this is what's exciting for those of us that are from the outside, is that it's not unique for Alaska. Rural healthcare across our country is facing the same kinds of problems. How do the people who have needs get taken care of? And then they evolve their own system. And this is why we're hoping some mechanism right now to have the health aides who are maybe reticent to speak out and describe their problems. How do you describe healthcare problems in 15 minutes, you know? It can't be done. And I don't know how. I guess that's my question to you. What mechanism can we use to provide rather than my outlining or somebody else outlining our needs? Is there a mechanism other than a group coming in and sitting down with the health aides and everybody trying to talk to one?
Senator Thomas just had an idea, maybe others do too, that maybe what we should be doing is listening to you as you progress in your education or getting the input from the people who are here who are going to be delivering the systems. Maybe this would be like, willing to
do it. I'm not an expert in social service systems, but the state essentially doesn't have any kind of a delivery system in the rural areas. And that's what really we're, you know, what we primarily deal with, the state expenditures of funds. I suppose the most we can do in terms of what the federal government does is to resolve to do this and that, or urge that they do this and that, you know, whatever appears to be what's needed. You know, the state's delivery system is a mail service. I mean, you know, you get a check from the welfare office, and maybe that's it. I mean, they don't have any programs. The state, as far as I know, unless things have changed in the last 10 years, I don't know that they changed that much. There's nothing. I mean, they've left this as the bailiwick of the federal government. And all of the physical and mental problems that people might have. And Norton Sound Health Corporation, Yukon Kuskokwim Health Corporation, and some of the newer ones that we're starting, helping get started, like in this area and two or three other areas in the state, are really federal government attempts to try to fill the void, you know, where there is no real involvement of the people in the area in healthcare problems. Most of these people who have been involved in as health aides, you know, for years work essentially for nothing. I mean, they feel they need that the people had, and they were the ones that were in touch with the doctors. So. And this is, you know, these people are essentially trying to band together to improve the healthcare system because they've been the ones most close to health, you know, in the village, with a very limited amount to work with. I'm not sure what the state provides except for public health nurses that they periodically travel around and work with the public health service. I don't believe the state in any way supplements these people's income for the work they do in the village. And I'm not really sure what the state could do. In terms of mental health care, this is, you know, only the most serious problems, of course, are dealt with outside of the village structure. They usually have to go to AI, I suppose, in Anchorage. But other than that, I don't see that there's any kind of mechanisms, any way to try to work, you know, with those individuals, you know, if they resolve their problem at API and go back home. I don't know what happens then. But, you know, I'm at a loss as to what we can do through the state, or whether we can even sell anything to the legislature that's going to cost anything. You know, I mean, if we try to do something in the rural areas, it's very difficult to try to limit, you know, the service to one area. Like if we try to do something in the Cosby or Nome areas, it's more than likely there'll be a problem that's all over the state, so, you know, and just how much are we going to be able to do? You know, in the alcoholism area, you know, I know very well that the income we get from the tax of alcohol is quite substantial. You know, it's something millions, you know, $5 or $6 million, and even though we put a little bit more into the alcoholism programs than we did before, still, as far as I'm concerned, we ought to use the bulk of that money that comes in for revenue for alcoholism problems, because to me, you know, alcohol and revenues from alcohol should be used to go back into the social system to help take care of the bad effects of alcohol. That's why I'm such a proponent of really city-owned system, purchasing of or selling of alcohol. Like if, you know, if we're going to have liquor, I've always said, we ought to have the city-owned package stores, because at least the revenues could be used to help, say, build the dry-out centers, the detox centers. But this is a major problem in the state. It's not just a problem of Kotzebue or Nome. It's a problem in Anchorage and Fairbanks, you know. When we decided that alcoholism was no longer, you know, you can't be thrown in jail for, you know, being drunk, you have to, the community or the state has to provide any place for these people to go. And we don't have, as far as I know, an adequate system of assisting communities to have these facilities. It's not a crime, but then the only place they've had in the past is the jail to help people dry out, you know, at least get them away from children and families. So to me, this is one area it seems to me that we could probably do something with, in as much as it is a state problem, and a statewide problem, particularly if you have towns the size of Kotzebue and larger, or even some of the smaller communities, if they have occasional serious drug problems, you know, the whole community might be threatened in some fashion. They have to put away some money. And there's some villages that just don't have these facilities.
Yet, I think, William, the statement of the problem, the constraints are there. The legislation may have pipelines within itself and not want to do things that they have to do at all. And yet, shouldn't we be thinking of health care and the total thing, not an individual program, like you came back to that? If we've got funding for alcoholism, why build?
I think they could provide a means of or coordinating or joining efforts, you know, between the various agencies. As you know, these health corporations cover substantially large areas, but I'm not so sure, you know, what their future is, you know, fund-wise. We've spent most of the money in the Norton Sound and Yukon Custom areas the last several years that we've had health right monies, you know. I don't know what the future of those funds are, but they really, I think, provided that the only means by which we've had any village level participation in trying to decide, you know, priorities for health care in the area.
I might ask a question the other way here. You had a youngster, let's take a village, just say, in Catalina, we had a youngster out there, a seven-year-old, who had a very serious problem of a severe draining ear or a very severe visual problem, which had been somewhere picked up by the health aid. How would that child be taken care of? Could any of the health aid from that village, for instance, tell us how they would move, what they would do to get the child into care? Or any village, just pick up. Can someone just tell us what happens?
A mother brings a patient in with, you know, draining ear, even if it's for a sore throat or anything. We check the child over. We call the doctor on the radio. We usually tell them what to treat. On days when the radio conditions are really bad, we have a manual, a standing orders manual. We're going to use that. But what makes it really, really hard for us are the days when we can't get the doctor on the radio and we have a patient that we just don't know what's wrong with the patient and we don't know what treatment is. And those are the patients that worry me the most. And I think it's the same all over with all the other health aides. But for the girls that have gone for advanced health training, we've had a really good training. And I think most of us are able to handle otitis media, strep throat, all those, diarrhea. But there are still times when we need to call the doctor on the radio. We depend a lot on the radio.
You depend on the public health nurses?
The public health nurse tries to come to each village at least 3 or 4 times a year. Am I right? And she does a lot of screening. And she does immunizations, and she helps us with the patients that we have.
Communications obviously is a very key element in this whole thing. Are improvements being made now on radio? Are you getting single side measures? What's happening in this regard?
The doctor, I think, would answer. He's always at the other end of the radio. Can I call on you, Dr. Caldwell, or Dr.
Caldwell? Dr. Caldwell would be here.
Before I answer, I'd like to second that Dr. Huffman mentioned that I do sense a certain awkwardness in this large group trying to talk about substantial issues. And I think that a more effective way to accomplish what you would like to accomplish and what many of us would like to discuss with you would be a smaller group of select officers or health aides and some other people. But to answer this specific question, the radios for many years in both the Northern Sound part of the service unit and the country you have have been high frequency radios that have multiple bands that multiple groups use. RCA uses, BIA uses, many groups use these. Many of the radios are very old. Some of the radios are relatively new. However, the basic type of radio communication is high frequency radio communication, which tends to be at the whim of the weather, which I was mentioning before you all got here. There's really not any sense that the radios using radios of the present type are going to be improved by anything. In Kotzebue and in Nome, there is an amplifier such that our voices in Kotzebue are amplified, and generally people in the villages, not very generally, people in the villages can hear us. When the trouble arises is if the villages don't have amplifiers, and we can't hear them. So many, many days we'll have radio traffic in which I can just barely hear somebody on the show map saying, I copy you crystal clear, you know, and I have a slight idea what they're talking about, but they hear me. So that basic argument exists, and I don't see any change or improvement in that type of radio communication. Involved in this is the fact that many radios are kind of busted radios, and some communities don't even have radios that work anyway. There is a very long time lag in getting new radios for those villages. Because the PHS is kind of working with it, that takes a long time. In the Tanana service unit, they use a satellite radio to all the villages. And communication has occurred. That's a sort of experimental program that was fortunately refunded, and they continue to have their satellite radio. That's the kind of system that would vastly improve communication between the villages and between the service center. That's a long way off, and it's hardly even being discussed for an area like Kotzebue or Nome. People drop by occasionally and do surveys and never see them again. But the system we're stuck with now, and probably any time in the foreseeable future, is this Goldberg high frequency radio system. It is atrocious in Nome, and
can I ask for a 5-minute break? My health days are pretty tired with this.
Could you tell me about the pandemic?
Wait, we asked the lady to say who she is and where she's from. Please.
I'm Tara Ayunra from Alaknak. And I'm the president for Community Health Aid Association in Kuskokwim Yukon area. I have one person in our village who is mentally ill. And he's not sick enough to be in the the hospital, so we keep him in our village. And he's got to come in about, sometimes he'd come into clinic every day, whether he's got anything to say or not. I just let him, sometimes he'll come in. And when I ask him, what can I do for you? He say, nothing. And just, and then I let him sit down and just, you know, offer him coffee. And then try to have conversations with him. Sometimes he won't have conversation at all. He just sit there. And then sometimes he'll come in and just talk to me about killing himself and all that. All that some people are, I was watching him and all of his problems that I listened to him. And for instance, one time he came in the afternoon, he was very restless. And I just play along with him. And he said he didn't let the storekeeper in the store because he didn't want him to work in the store. So he was going to get some cells, steal some cells from some place and shoot him this afternoon. And so I asked him, would the others, other clerks then let you buy a gun or, you know, anything or work in the store if you kill the manager? And he said, I think he would, I mean, he would let me work in that store. And things like that, you have to be calm with them. And they just come and go, and they may talk and get wild sometimes at their homes, and chase their folks off. But if, I think a person who is mentally ill like that, I mean, they don't need somebody to mistreat them. He's doing real good, you know, because nobody mistreats him, and everybody seems to understand him. And so he knows that when he's got something to get rid of that's bothering him, he comes to clinic because he thinks that clinic is somewhere where he could clear his mind out of the things that bothers him, as well as his physical ailments.
Madam Chair, may I ask a question? I understand the UConn Kuskokwim Health Group are training social workers also. Now, would you have anyone, I think they're social worker aides, would you have anybody else that could ever help you if you didn't have time to deal with social workers?
Well, that patient always either come to me or that social worker. And then some, we often meet and talk about problems like that. And he helps him to, now he takes care of, whenever he needs to go to hospital, he's the one who takes care of him instead of him. Because even I talk to a doctor and report him, he's physically okay, but he needs, he gets money for disabled. And then now then he has to go to hospital to have examination, and that the social worker takes care of that.
If you are the social worker, and you really have a little kind of a community-based clinic, then, don't you, between the two of you?
We always have to work together.
If you decided it was time for him, that he was so severe that he should be taken from the village, then who would you contact to help you with that?
Oh, I always contact the social worker in the hospital and talk to him directly over the radio.
In them?
Yes. And then he sees to it that the person gets to have evaluated in hospital, either in API or in Bethel.
I think of what we should talk about all the counseling that the hospitals do in providing the villages. Like, many patients are not serious enough to refer out of the village to the hospital, either here or in the village.
Could you tell us your name and what you do so we can provide him this public health care site with the Los Angeles operation with the healthy training program? Okay, I just wanted to mention the healthy is spending a lot of time counseling with the patients, and the patients are not serious enough to put on to another person. So, I think that's important, but maybe call up for that one person to get sent out of the village, or she has a social worker to consult with. But for the other people who are not quite that critical, she probably spends her holidays and a lot of time just coming up with answers for them themselves. This isn't seen at all by people in Washington, D.C., or even Juneau, or even Anchorage.
Madam Chairman? I'm Myra Fritz, legislator from Anchorage. Could I ask these ladies a couple of questions? Has this patient of yours ever been in a hospital and evaluated?
Yes.
Do you know what his diagnosis is, what they said wrong with him? Was it schizophrenic or catatonic or what?
He had meningitis as a child. And then he had his blackouts up until he was 20. And then after that, he never had those, you know, convulsions anymore. But he's doing okay, except for a lot of headaches.
He's been in the hospital,
yes,
then.
And he's on medication.
Oh, that's the next thing I was going to ask you.
Another thing, the health aide's job is to, you know, in all the villages, there's always village meetings. I believe that health aide's job is to let the people know that that person is not to be scared of. You know, back in about 10 years ago, we had, there was one person who was mentally ill in Imaga, and everybody was scared of him. Like, when he's walking down the street, he was harmless. He was walking down the street and everybody was going, you know, who are staying up. And that kind of bothered him. So the health aides got together and started talking about that, and we mentioned that they brought that up in the village meeting. The more the people are scared of that person, the worse he's going to get, you know. Anybody would, I would get, you know. And so people started ignoring him. I'm dealing with he didn't run away from him anymore, and
then
he was okay in the village.
I ask another question. Are you paid?
Yes.
Does the village pay you, or who?
No, I'm just a medical aide, and I get my pay from ABCC.
From what?
ABCP, that's Alaska Village Council President Association.
Thank you.
Last year, we received many letters from aides indicating that the pay, they work 24 hours a day, actually, and the pay is very minimal. Could we just have someone tell us approximately what the pay is at this time? Hugo, would you like putting you on the spot or
in training the health aid, training on the mental health, I think it may not be feasible in this picture, but it might be somehow with some fund coming from some of the short, that it might be a good idea to send out two or three, like send a health aid in two or three groups into Anchorage and to this API hospital. And observe how these professionals at API treat and observe these people. I thought this might be a good idea to deal with the problem of most of that has been trying to learn the system of paperwork only. I think it would be a good idea to give them a personal, professional personnel, treat these people.
This is Dave Plana, who's our community health development director of Harmony Sound. I think one thing that we don't want to miss is Paula's description very graphically of her mental health problem in the village is the health aide is taking care of this. There's not a program coming through. The village itself is dealing with this particular problem. And I think, again, we want to meld with giving her greater facilities. Gabe suggests maybe one technique of further training is to train the health aide more completely in mental health problems. There's 510 for a trained health aide 400 a month without training.
Let's break that down a little bit further. That breaks down for 720 hours a month on call, and that breaks down to 65 cents an hour if you're making 510, and if you're making 400 a month because you've only had part of the training that's been available, that means 55 cents an hour. So it's really lousy pay considering all the services that the health aides provide for any given village. Really, can I ask him a question? I think we'd like to kind of know what kind of money we have available, because we're not asking for the help that we may work with them. They're not asking for another position or another system to come in, like a mental health care delivery system. I think that what they're saying is that they would like to have someone come around and work with them, like come around on an itinerant basis, work with them, like all of the specifically with the health aide on her specific mental health patient problems. Not go into terms, you know, like does a guy have schizophrenia or whatever he has. That isn't the important thing to live in the village with that person every day. What's important to the health aide is how can I work best with him? How can I know as much as I need to know about his medicines or about his treatment or about what I can do as a health aide or what I can advise his family to do? So I think it is saying they'd like someone, a resource person to travel on.
Just before we close, I'd like to say that the health aides, the training, when the health aides go on training, they don't see the other picture. They don't see the husband having to take care of the children while the health aide is going to training in Northern Sound. They have to sit at home, which is just contrary to the cultural background of the natives. You see, the husband used to be the one that used to go out all the time. Now they have to be the backseat driver.
My cultural background.
They have to be the backseat driver, and it's hard to adjust to that kind of thing. You just see the enormous problem that they face, and they have to be really dedicated to go through this type of training, and they don't see that part of it. And I wish they would see that more of it, because the husband has to stay home, take care of the children, and help aid their training. And you have to give the husband a lot of credit for being a patient husband.
He's a great man, you know that? Two things he said, they're both great.
Dr. Cooper, and I would like to answer your question about the payment of these. Perhaps all of you don't understand. I don't know whether everybody knows me.
Who are you, ma'am?
I'm Eva Boyce with the Public Health Service and director of the chapter in Public Health Service. The money that goes to pay the salaries all over the state for the public health, or the health aides, comes from a budget from the Public Health Service. And I hope maybe you can help us in getting more money for it. But the basic pay this year has been $400 a month until they're finished. So it's $400 a month until they finish their training. Then it's been $510 a month. And we asked for more money this year, and we hope to get some more, but everybody else's budget stayed the same, so did ours. So it's not going to come up, except that this year they've stipulated that they will give us a budget to pay the aides at the rate of $520 per aide in the state. And that's limited to 186, I believe, or 185, I guess. We have 156 villages. And we cannot increase the number of aides or anything. They won't let us do this. So the corporations are contracted then to pay the people. That's what the ABCP is. It depends on what corporation in the areas are paying them. They're the ones that have to determine this year as to what each person is going to get, because we cannot do anything. We tried to get a stipulation that we could adjust salaries and get more villages covered, but they wouldn't let us do it. So we're within a budget based on $520 per main aid. This is another thing that made us feel very bad, is there's no money in this budget allowed for your substitute aid payments, which they need to pay occasionally too. So it's going to be within the corporation doing the payments to decide how to pay this and maybe adjust salaries so they can pay a substitute. But as far as public health service goes, we can only give the amount of $500 maybe this next coming year. We're hoping. They promised us more money next year, but maybe you're working in legislature. You know, it's not probably going to depend on that promise.
Madam Chairman, could I ask you something? Isn't there some private foundation funding that's coming into this village?
I haven't heard of it yet. Has anybody heard of it?
There is something else going on, I think, that sometimes they just support, maybe have just eyes, ears, and nose.
Yeah, there are various programs that they are funding as health care, but not paying in health aid that I've heard of.
Maybe we ask another question. As I understand that the health corporation's money used to flow through OEO, right? And now, does it come directly to the health corporation out of federal money?
I think they got transferred to HEW. We had a major problem, a political problem, trying to get our funds this last year. We were held up about 6 months or so. And I think some of our politicians wanted to have the money directly to each corporation and bypass the federation. That was a hang-up, a primarily political problem. And I think once it's been transferred, I don't think we should go through this rigmarole every year. I think we'll probably hopefully in a better funding situation with respect to health right money.
But the money that you've got in your health care doesn't come to the salaries. See, the salaries all in one pot in the public health service.
I have one question. That is it just one health aid for a village, or is it, do you have a, depending on the size of the community, or how do you?
It's a size. See, that's why there's 185 health aids that we call main health aids in only 156 villages. Some of them are large enough to have two aids.
Do all the villages have health aids in the North of Sound and Custom area?
Except Council.
Is that a village?
It's not paid. That's a village that's not paid.
Right, so that was on the list that we suggested we get some more health aids this year. Port Lee wants one, there's another one, Carroll, Sorokin, and various. There's about 16 villages asking for them. But word from Washington said we couldn't increase the number this year.
Does the public health service fund the training sessions?
For all the five service units except to contribute and special. Those are under the responsible. For all the training.
Another big problem with having funding is they have allocated one aid per 300 population. We're having a lot of villages going over 300, 350, 400, and that's the state of one aid. And the way a lot of these villages are laid out, they're long, miles, some of them are 2 miles, are split by a river. And we don't have money to get another state aid in there.
Mr. Hoondorf did tell me that they promised some more money the 1st of December that might add another $10 per aid.
Much difference, actually, for this year, the rest of this year.
And that doesn't play a pretty good salary. And they wouldn't allow any vacation pay to see this. What we wanted more money for pay, especially the days that they need to have some time off. And that's not allowed in this present country.
Well, I'm not sure. I think down there RCA has been putting in their single village telephone passing.
Yeah, but then there are single villages of it, only about 20 out of 15 villages. Public health service through the University of Alaska deal because they're doing a survey right now for VHF. And they said there will be, if this works out, be radios for every community there. And the weather will not make any difference. If this goes through, because the VHS must have money for it.
But it's always PHS again that funds these radios.
That's federal money, that's where everything's coming from.
Chapter 12, before we break for lunch, I'll have to ask, Eva, would you time before later in the day? We ran over our time.